Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. It should be a good one.
Thanks for having me, Steven.
Double X, anytime, man.
Christopher Mad Dog Russo here. You are listening to Steven Strom on TalkNorth.com.
Always passionate, always fiery. You're listening to the Strom Sports Show. Take it away, Steven.
Here we go now. Strom Sports Show, episode 157 on the great TalkNorth.com. On this 30th day of July, lot to get into. Arthur Staple from The Athletic. He covers the Islanders. We'll get a little bit of a feel for where Parisi and the Islanders stand. A little Jack Eichel talk. How much does the Minnesota Wild have to give up to get Eichel in a Minnesota Wild uniform? And is it going to be worth it with some of the neck surgery questions that the NHL has? And that's why there's been some hesitancy towards trading for Jack Eichel. So we'll get into all that, some takeaways as well. He will be coming up in a couple of minutes here. We have a ton to get into. Vikings training camp was back this week in full effect. I waited until Thursday night-ish because, training camp, there's something about it. Guys have been working out all summer, and I understand that. But there's always one big injury. I didn't want to come on here and record, and then something goes down, and I'm praying that nothing happens as far as the Vikings go. But I wanted to talk football. I wanted to talk Vikings football specifically. This has been, and I tried finding a buzzword for this because you can't really say the best offseason ever because you have no idea what some of these guys are going to be like come September, October, November. So I thought that the word active would be the best word. It's a positive word, right? This has been the most active offseason for the Vikings, and I feel like they plugged a whole bunch of holes that they really didn't know who was going to step in some of these positions for 2021. The offseason has really treated the Vikings well. They've picked up wide receiver D.D. Westbrook, Breshad Breeland, Xavier Woods, Patrick Peterson, Stephen Weatherly, Mackenzie Alexander, Dalvin Tomlinson, Michael Pierce, who opted out last year. The Vikes are going to get him. And also, you sort of get like a first-round pick in Danielle Hunter since he was out last year with the neck. He comes back. Look, you look at last year, there was so much pressure on the rookie class. And I'm talking about the secondary specifically with Jeff Gladney and Cam Dantzler. It's a huge problem. You know, when you draft a rookie, you expect him to come in here and compete against veteran guys. There was no one to compete against. When the Vikings lost Xavier Rhodes, Mackenzie Alexander, this was last year. The rookies knew that they were going to play. I mean, there was no question if they were going to play or not. And Mike Zimmer had no choice. He had to play some of these kids, and they were not ready, and they needed to grow up fast, but that's a huge problem to have. When you draft rookies, they need to know that they need to earn their spot. And when you come into a position where you know you're going to get it, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and question the work ethic of some of these rookies. I just think you throw in guys in positions where they've got to guard Davante Adams twice and some of these other top wide receivers, it's not an easy task. So I think that the fact that they brought in Peterson and Woods and Breeland, are those great household names up to this point? No, but it's an automatic upgrade, and that's the most important thing going into 2021. And that defense, I'm very excited for. It's going to be a lot better, I can confidently say, than last year, which Mike Zimmer called the worst defense he has ever had. So I also wanted to touch up on some of the biggest question marks going into training camp as the doors have opened at TCO Performance Center, and you've got fans there now. It's really exciting that we've come a long way since last year, but let's start with the biggest questions going into training camp for the Minnesota Vikings. And number one, we just talked about the secondary. The defense last year ranked 27th in yards allowed, and they gave up 29.7 points per game, which was the fourth most in the NFL. I said it before, this defense was brutal. It was atrocious. Zimmer was doing everything that he could possibly do, and it still wasn't enough. They were still giving up 29.7 points per game. It's an automatic upgrade getting some of these guys in. Peterson, Woods, Breeland, automatic. It doesn't matter how old these guys are. You look at some of the grades that PFF gave some of these defenders and defensive backs. I want to say that it's not going to get any worse than that. I don't want to jinx it. I guess I'll knock on wood right here. But automatically, this defense, especially the secondary, is going to be better. And again, it doesn't have to be a top secondary. It just needs to be middle of the pack. You're just looking to bridge the gap. And it's the same way with the offensive line that we'll get into in a sec here. But you're getting a front four in Sheldon Richardson, Dalvin Tomlinson, Danielle Hunter, and whoever plays on that other end. This is going to be a vastly improved defensive line that's going to be able to get to the quarterback. So the secondary isn't going to have as much pressure as they did last year, because the pass rush last year was another atrocious area for this defense. So I think if the secondary can just be halfway decent, the Vikings will get back to a top 10 defense. And especially when you get that crowd back, which was a huge, huge loss for the Vikings specifically, that feed off that energy in US Bank Stadium, the decibel rate, it's awesome, it's loud, it's intimidating. The Vikings are going to get that back as well. Don't ever forget that. The second question mark is the offensive line. It always is. Kirk Cousins last year, he took 116 hits, which was by far the most in his NFL career. You look at this offensive line, Riley Reiff is the only one that doesn't return. You had to cut into his salary. He was making way too much money. Four of the five starters return. I would say a couple of names to keep an eye out on. Number one is Wyatt Davis. He's a third-round pick from Ohio State. He's going to really push Dakota Dozier, who isn't great. It wouldn't surprise me if Davis beats Dozier out. And then a big question mark is the health of rookie Christian Darrisaw and his groin. He pulled it, and Zimmer's taking it pretty, I would say, cautiously as far as pushing Darrisaw. We know that the Vikings traded back and still ended up getting their guy. This offensive line needs to be a lot better. And again, same with the secondary. It doesn't have to be like the Colts. It doesn't have to be a top five one. The Vikings have enough playmakers. Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, D.D. Westbrook. And now I'm very curious to see what the tight end position goes, as Irv Smith is more of a vertical tight end. And so, you know, Tyler Conklin is also a decent tight end as well. Automatic upgrade. And I loved Kyle Rudolph. He served his purpose here. But at Rudy's point in his career, he wasn't breaking tackles. He wasn't, you know, getting up the field for 15, 16 yards. He was strictly a red zone presence, and I think with Irv Smith, unlocking him is going to be another big part. But the offensive line just needs to be halfway decent. They need to keep up their immobile quarterback, Kirk Cousins, and I think that this is another offense that can pretty much be in the top 10 in a lot of these categories, especially with the way they want to play. The last question mark, and the Vikings got to figure this out. Okay, they have to figure this out, because this has been a thorn in their sides for way too long. The kicking and the special teams. Like, we talk about Zimmer and the quarterbacks. We talk about Case Keenum. We talk about Bradford. We talk about Castle. We talk about Teddy. We talk about all these quarterbacks that Zimmer needed to go through. What about the kickers? Okay, Blair Walsh, Daniel Carlson, Kai Forbath, Dan Bailey, Kerry Vedvik, and now you have Greg Joseph or rookie Riley Patterson. The Vikings need to figure this out. They ranked last in field goal percentage and then 29th in extra point percentage, okay? I shouldn't have to sit here next to my father as Dan Bailey trots up for an extra point and be cautious. I mean, like, please make this, please make this. That shouldn't be it at this point. We shouldn't have full-blown anxiety when some of these kickers come out here to kick an extra point. The Vikings need to figure it out. It's sloppy. It's just sloppy, and it does. I'm telling you, it changes the way the game not only is played, but especially when you come to the fourth quarter and you're like, you're down four and you missed an extra point and a field goal, you count 3 points, four, it should be a tie game. And I don't know how many times this has happened with the Vikings these last couple of years, so I don't know if Greg Joseph is a guy. He's been in the league for a couple of years here. He's bounced from team to team. Riley Patterson's a rookie. The Vikings need to figure this out. And it's same thing goes for the punter. And same thing goes for the punt returner. Marcus Sherrills, who we let walk, he never fumbled. And he always was getting positive yards off the punt return. Hopefully, D.D. Westbrook steps in. But, I mean, K.J. Osborne, some of these guys, like, you can't be sloppy in that area. You can't be sloppy in special teams. It comes back to always bite you. My saying on special teams, it's not going to win you a game, but it can certainly lose you a game. You're kicking, you're punting, you're kick returning, and you're punt returning. It can lose you a game. It may not win you one, but it will lose you a game, and the Vikings need to figure that out. So good. Good stuff today on the Vikings. Good stuff today on training camp. We need to just really be hopeful that no injuries are occurring and no injuries will occur in the future. This is always a scary time around this time. I always remembered as like a kid, you know, you would have, I'll never forget when Brady went down, and I think it was 2008 or 9, whatever it was, and Castle took it. Like, you fear about reading that report that a guy like Tom Brady goes down, and for Vikings fans, Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, there's too many guys. I don't even want to name them. So that's where we're at as far as Vikings goes. I think I'm going to get Ben Gessling on next week. We'll talk a little bit about the Vikings and training camp. But last thing I want to talk about, and I hate that I have to talk about this, and I hate that I have to admit this, but as a Viking fan, I know that we're not supposed to like Rodgers. I know we're not. And I hate the Packers immensely. But the way that Aaron Rodgers handled things on Tuesday was so damn amusing. And I have to say, with great disappointment, but I think I'm falling for Aaron Rodgers off the field. I really find the guy entertaining. I very much, I don't know if it's because he has just completely stepped over and stomped on the Packers front office that I find so much joy in it. But even like the Jeopardy thing, guy's talented. Guy goes on the radio with Pat McAfee. He's funny. He's doing things that, like, I want to sit here and not laugh and be the grumpy Viking fan that nothing Rodgers can do can make me happy. But man, he was funny as hell. I mean, some of the quotes that came out on Tuesday, quote, Green Bay isn't a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me. Quote, I love this team. I love this, or, you know, the fans, close quote. He was ready to say the organization, but he stopped and said, you know, the fans. And then on his retirement, he goes, quote, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of tough decisions at the end of this year. I'm just going to focus on enjoying this year, close quote. The bluntness, the honesty, the curtness, whatever you want to call it, I just widely respect it. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that would step in front of a podium and just kind of just let it rip. And Aaron Rodgers is willing to do that. And I think he knows that he's able to do that with no consequence, but it is really entertaining. And it's hard not to find amusement in this. And I can't stand him on the field because he kills my team. But off the field, man, I never thought I'd say this. I really like Aaron Rodgers. He is very funny. He is very amusing. He's very entertaining. I think he's got a really bright future after he plays football. And that's really just what I want to talk about. And just real quick, I want to put in this nugget. It's funny because, and I don't think the Packers are really ready to move on from him this offseason, you know, after the MVP year. But I think by drafting Jordan Love, they're trying to do what they did to Brett Favre and get Rodgers in and push Favre out, get Jordan Love in and push Rodgers out. It's funny because when the Packers pulled the plug on Brett Favre, do you know what his record was in 2007? 13-3. It's weird that you would move on from a guy after going 13-3 and didn't even blink. You know what Rodgers' record was this year? 13-3. Will Aaron Rodgers have that year where he goes 6-10 or 6-11 now because there's an added game? Will he have to go to the 6-11s to be pushed out of Green Bay? Or will it be a sort of a Brett Favre situation where Rodgers goes 13-3 and they still push him out? That is a very interesting topic to discuss. And there is something deep-rooted within the organization because it's not about money with Rodgers. Something happened. Someone did something to him. He wasn't part of a decision. Whatever it may be, there is something that is deeper than money in that organization with Aaron Rodgers. And I hope it continues because I think it's freaking hilarious. But it's not hilarious if they go 13-3 again. But I just wanted to make that point because I know Viking fans and we're very stubborn about Packers and not liking other players. And I get on the field. But off the field, I guess I'll just end this with you guys, Viking fans. Do you like Aaron Rodgers off the field? Do you think that he's amusing? Do you find him entertaining? If there's an interview with him and Dan Patrick, are you turning the TV off if it is on? And I think a lot of you would say, no, I'm going to keep that sucker on. That's all my point. Still hate the Packers immensely. Don't get that twisted. All right. Arthur Staple, The Athletic, covers the Islanders. Parisi, Suter, Eichel, everything that you need to know. Biggest takeaways from free agency. That's coming up next here on the Strom Sports Show. Before we get to Art, let me tell you real quick about my experience with Manscaped. They sent me two products. They sent me the lawnmower, and they also sent me the weed whacker. Let's first start with the weed whacker. It has been a life-changing tool for me. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. It's for your nose. It's for your ears. It's got 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system that's out of this world. It also provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs, which is a huge part of it as well. You don't want to be putting a scissor up there. You don't want to be getting knacks and nicks and this and that. So the weed whacker has been incredible. And then the lawnmower itself, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. Again, it just, I'm not just saying this to be funny. It is a absolutely amazing product. They have really taken care of me, and it can also take care of you. And it's summer too. You want to stay clean. You want to stay fresh. You want to go out at the bar. You want to go out to the beach. You want to feel comfortable. You want to feel confident. And look, you get 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code STROM. So you can't beat that. You're listening to it. You might as well hop on your phone as I read this to you again. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code STROM, STROM at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code STROM, STROM at manscaped.com. Here's Art Staple. All right, Arthur Staple is with us now. He is a senior writer for The Athletic covering the New York Islanders. Art, Steven Strom here. Thank you very much for carving out some time for me today. My biggest fear about doing these things is because this is coming out tomorrow morning. This is a huge, huge day, day two of free agency. So I'm hoping that this isn't outdated by tomorrow morning.
You never know. You never know, especially with the Islanders talking a little bit about them since they haven't, to this point as we're recording, haven't actually announced anything, but that's just the way Lou Lamoriello operates.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I wanted to start there. We'll start with the odds like we talked about. We're going to tie in some Wild. We're just trying to get you guys updated here on free agency. Let's start with the Islanders here. Every sign points towards Zach Parise going to the Islanders. What's the latest on Parise and the Islanders?
Well, you know, I think you can sort of tell by the fact that there's not a lot of chatter about him going anywhere else. And that's usually the most telltale sign once you get into free agency that the Islanders are deep into conversations or already have an agreement with someone. You know, there's obviously a natural connection between him and Lou Lamoriello. From the time that Parise was bought out a couple weeks ago, I think people made that connection just because, you know, back at the trade deadline in 2019-20, they got very close to acquiring him. So, you know, I think Parise came out to Long Island to meet with Lamoriello in the last couple weeks and kind of check out the area. You know, he's got the organizational connection through his dad, who scored one of the biggest goals kind of in the early Islanders history way back in 1975. And he's got some, you know, Zach has lots of fond memories about hearing about the Islander days from his dad. So I think there's a lot of natural connections there. And, you know, maybe, you know, the fact that he's 37 now, maybe it's not quite Zach Parise in his prime, but I still think the Islanders feel like he can contribute, you know, maybe not with tons of minutes on the ice, but just be, you know, another guy that they like, a high character guy who can kind of spread Barry Trotz's message throughout the room and be a contributor in that way.
When I talked to Michael Russo, he basically, and he's been writing this, the two locations that make the most sense is the Islanders and then the Golden Knights. But as you sort of alluded to, Parise was willing to waive his no move clause in 2019 and 2020 in order to speak to Lamoriello. Where do you think, or how do you think he fits on this Islander team? You know, this is back-to-back times they've gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think Parise would fit perfectly with what Barry Trotz is trying to do there.
Yeah, you know, I could see him being, you know, third line left wing with Jean-Gabriel Pageot. He's probably a guy who can move around the lineup if need be, kind of depending on what he shows in training camp. And I think the biggest addition that he brings is on the power play. You know, he's been a proven power play producer for a long, long time in this league. And the Islanders' power play has been, quite frankly, mediocre or below for Barry Trotz's entire three seasons that he's been here, even though they've got some talented guys like Matthew Barzal and Anders Lee and Brock Nelson. It still has never been consistent enough to really be a huge factor for them. And I think that's what Zach Parise can bring. If he's a guy who can handle himself 5-on-5 in Barry Trotz's system, which I think he can, because he was a Devil for such a long time. And that was not necessarily a team that played a wide open style. But I think on the power play is where he'd add the most.
From an outside perspective, what was your reaction last week when Ryan Suter and Zach Parise were bought out here by Bill Guerin?
It's a bold move, you know. Bill is a guy who was a player, spoke his mind, and was always kind of candid and honest. And I think he appreciated that from the people that he worked for when, you know, he had a brief time with the Islanders before I covered them when they weren't quite so good. But his relationships that he built here, I think some of the guys that played with him learned a lot from him and just the way that he carried himself as a player. And I think moving into his time as an executive with Pittsburgh before he got to Minnesota, it was a lot of the same way. And players really appreciated that. You know, I don't necessarily know that that Zach Parise and Ryan Suter appreciated it at the time, but I think he's doing what's best for the organization. They're trying to move into a different phase of their existence, basically. You know, they were kind of defined by those two deals for many years ago. Yep. and never quite, you know, got to any level of consistent success in the playoffs that they needed to get to, and cycled through plenty of other guys. And I think now he's trying to put them in a position where their star players are a little bit younger. You know, you've got Kirill Kaprizov, you needed to free up some money to keep him in the fold, and making some other moves to make them, you know, a bit less reliant on their two stars, and maybe even, you know, less reliant on those two voices in the locker room as well. And, you know, it's hard to cut the cord. I'm sure it was a bit of a shock to the fans there too, but it had to happen sometime, and to kind of swallow that bitter pill that they're going to have to swallow in the next few years in terms of the dead money against the cap, better to try to figure it out now with this year where you get a little bit more relief and try to plan your future than to kind of wait and see what happens.
Well, Art, to be honest with you, the way that Parisi's season went, and it honestly started with trying to get Marcus Foligno actually a hat trick against the Vegas Golden Knights. He stays out for a little bit more than he probably should have, and Vegas ends up tying it up. He was really in the doghouse. So honestly, the buying out of Parisi wasn't as big of a shock. It was the Ryan Suter aspect of it that, you know, still averaging 20 plus minutes on the ice. That was more of the shock, I think, from the fans' perspective. But it's hard. I mean, 2012, they completely reshaped the franchise, the outlook of it. When they landed these two guys, these were supposed to be the two that brought the Wild to the promised land. And we had this conversation last week with, I think, or 2 weeks ago, with Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic. And, you know, they deserve a percentage of the blame. But another side of it was guys like Jason Zucker and Granlin and these younger guys that they thought were going to be ready for those deep playoff runs, they weren't. They weren't ready at the time to be those big time players. So again, hockey is the ultimate team sport. It's hard to sit and pinpoint that these two guys are the reasons that they didn't get to a Stanley Cup or even past the second round of the playoffs. But all in all, yeah, it was definitely a surprise to have these guys move on after only winning two playoff series, you know, playoff series in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, alluding to Suter, you could just see by the interest in him as soon as he was cut loose. You know, there was lots of teams calling his agent. The Islanders were obviously interested. I think they were maybe down to, you know, the runner-up to Dallas for his services when he did decide to sign the other day. You know, I guess you can kind of see the Islanders' model of, you know, be something Bill Guerin was drafted by Lou Lamoriello. I think, you know, Lou's tentacles are into a lot of other organizations via the guys that either played for him or worked for him in all his years in hockey. And I think Bill Guerin sort of has that feeling of like, if everybody's not, you know, it's about the logo on the front, not the name on the back.
Right.
And everybody has to be pulling on the rope. You need equal input from everybody. So, you know, it's not, and you see the success that the Islanders have had with a very, you know, a very no star system, essentially. You know, Matthew Barzal is a real talented player, but he's not a guy who's, you know, going to be on the ice in every situation. They have guys for defined roles. They don't allow anybody to kind of usurp any of that responsibility from anybody else. And certainly on their D, you know, you've got a lot of guys who are not considered household names, who are really well known now, guys like Adam Pellick, guys like Scott Mayfield, who have really had good playoff runs. And those are guys that are playing on incredibly cheap contracts, you know, throughout their RFA years. They're going to both get huge raises when they get to the market, like this year and Mayfield in a couple of years. But that's kind of how you build. And I think with Minnesota, you know, there was always talk that were they going to get rid of Matt Dumba? What about Jared Spurgeon? And I think you have to be able to start a little bit fresher. And obviously, the guys that they signed yesterday are not necessarily young guys. I know Alex Goligoski is over 35. Dmitry Kulikov is a little bit older too. But I think if you spread that wealth around, maybe it starts to build a better foundation than just kind of saying, we're going to go with Ryan Suter 30 minutes a night, see how we do.
I'm thinking where I want to go. I think I want to do one more here on the Islanders. Do you think there's a next level here to the Islanders? Because it just feels like Barry Trotz squeezes every last ounce of effort and talent, especially these last two seasons. Do the Islanders need to make a big splash, or do you think they'll be right back? Like, where are you at right now with the Islanders?
You know, they still have some work to do. And you know, the mystery with Ulan Murillo is that work could already be done, and we're just waiting for him to announce it. So, you know, I say that just not knowing what they've done, even if it's already been accomplished. But You know, the cap situation they've been in the last couple off seasons is a tough one. You know, they got rid of Devon Taves after their long run in the bubble in 2020. And he was a guy I thought was going to be a mainstay for them on D for a long, long time. And I think you can see in Colorado, he's become an elite top four defenseman in the league and, you know, probably got some Norris Trophy votes. But that was a cap situation. And, you know, the cap situation forced them to trade Nick Leddy a couple weeks ago. And Jordan Eberle was taken in the expansion draft by Seattle. So those were guys that were kind of key pieces and obviously costly ones against the cap to try to keep some flexibility. So there's some replacing they do have to do in terms of those guys that have been key components of what they've done the last couple of years. But, you know, I think to get to that next level, I don't know that they need to go out and make a big splash, more so just let guys like Noah Dobson on defense and Oliver Wahlstrom up front. They're really, they're only two really young guys that are on entry sure. level deals. Let them get a little bit more confidence and a little bit more time on the ice, fill key roles. Anders Lee missing the entire playoff run this past, you know, a couple months ago with a torn ACL was a huge blow for them. And just having him healthy and his presence, I think, will help. And I think they sort, you know, it's hard to argue with Barry Trotz saying they were one goal away. It's a 1-0 loss in game seven
yep.
to the eventual champs in the semifinals. And, you know, an Islanders Canadians matchup, I don't even think is a toss up. I think the Islanders would finally actually be favored in that final. So I don't know that they feel like they need to change a whole lot. And I think it's hard to argue with that stance just because they've been so close. They've lost to the champs. They gave the champs the best run that they had in the final four each of the last 2 years. So I think it's a matter of you know, getting fortunate with health, maybe keeping some options open for the trade deadline like they did the last couple of years. You know, adding Jean-Gabriel Pageau in 2020 was huge.
Yep.
Adding Kyle Palmieri, who's probably going to stick around at this past deadline, was huge. So I think, you know, keeping your options open and not necessarily saying right now in the offseason we have to make a splash and make sure that we're better going into the season. As long as you're in the mix and, you know, I don't feel like this team is going to be, you know, I think they've established themselves that they know what they need to do to be a playoff team every year and just get into the dance. So, you know, I think that's where they sit right now. And I think if you keep your options open to be able to add when you want to add and go for it is really where they need to be.
All right, Arthur Staple with us now. Really good spot. Two more left for you. Let's do Jack Eichel. You've seen him a lot more than we have out in Minnesota. Everything that I'm reading, like, you know, some of the offers that they want for Eichel after, you know, the injuries that he sustained last year. I don't know. I mean, some of these, you know, trade projected, and Twitter's crazy, but like, is the juice worth the squeeze for the Wild going out and getting Jack Eichel, especially after the buying out of Parisi and Suter? How would you handle this if you're Bill Guerin? Because the Wild do need a centerman. There's no question about it. But how much should the Wild be willing to give up for a guy like Jack Eichel?
It's a tough question. You know, you think about assets and then you think about what are we getting in return? Well, we're getting a guy who seems like he needs neck surgery, an experimental one at that, that's going to keep him out for several months, that he's in a tug of war with the Sabres about even getting started on that process as we get through the summer. And then 5 years left at a pretty big number. You've got the dead cap hits from Parise and Suter that are going to come up and bite you a little bit more in years 2, 3, and 4. It seemed like it's, and then Kaprizov's contract, which is going to be a big one as well. So it seems like it's not the ideal player for right now. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were out on it, but he is a world-class talent, and, you know, spending a long time losing, I would imagine, has motivated him to want to be a little bit more part of something that's on the upswing. And Minnesota does seem to be in that situation.
Sure.
So, you know, I think it's a tough decision on both sides. Do you know, my gut feeling is if you need a center, and you've got to make all these other things happen, and you're still wondering about his health, you know, a few months or a year into this deal, and you've given up tons of assets, I don't know that that's worth it. And it does seem like a lot of teams have sort of had that internal conversation of, is it worth it for us to change so much
right.
that we're unrecognizable? And also we put all our eggs in this one basket of a guy that we're not sure about health-wise. So I can see why the hesitation. I can see why teams haven't stepped up to meet Buffalo's asking price. I imagine it's going to come down and we'll see where we are in a month or so. It could be one of those that just kind of pops up during the dead time in August where somebody just says, okay, the heck with it. We're going to do it. Give it a shot.
Awesome spot here with Arthur Staple. Last one for you. Again, this is tough for us because this is day two. We're recording here at around 11 a.m. Eastern time. So this is coming out on technically day three of free agency. But if you had to give me your day one winners and losers really quickly here, what's the first couple teams that come to mind?
You know, I like what Seattle's doing. I feel like a lot of people were scratching their heads about what sort of plan they had in mind when the expansion draft came and went. They only took a couple of real established NHL players, didn't jump at Carey Price, didn't jump at Jonathan Quick. Well, I think they went out and got probably the best goalie that was available in Philip Grubauer. And I think that's a good foundation to start. You look at what they have in net and what they have on defense with Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak, and Oleksiak's a player I like a lot. That's a good foundation. I think up front they're a little thin, but if you're going to be a team that, you have to win 2-1 games right off the bat, well, I think they've got the right, the right personnel in place to start to try to do that. So I like what Seattle did. As far as teams that I didn't like, I'm not totally sold on Jersey. I know the popular opinion online is that Dougie is going to be worth the price, but I look at a guy like him who's had a lot of individual success and not a ton of team success in his previous stops, and I say, is this a guy that you're going to build around to kind of go from the ground up where the Devils really are? I'm not too sure about that. So, and they are in such a tough division in the Metro with all the teams that have, had successful runs over the last few years. I think it's going to be interesting to see where they go with that, and him and PK Subban for a year together on the same blue line on the same spot. It will be interesting. Montreal, I think, has had some interesting moves of late. They obviously were stuck in a situation with Shea Weber, and even with Carey Price, and hoping to kind of get some flexibility with that.
Sure.
Mike Hoffman's a good goal scorer. I'm not so sure that he's a real answer. And I think losing Philip Deneau is going to hurt them a lot more than people think, just because of the style that he played meshed so well with the style they played. So I wonder, and again, Montreal in a super tough division in the Atlantic with, Toronto, Florida, Tampa, three teams that you feel are locks to make the playoffs. And then the Bruins made a ton of moves yesterday. So I'm not so sure that we're going to see Montreal in the finals again next year or anytime in the near future, but we'll see. It was such a strange day, at least from my perspective, being the guy that focuses on the Islanders. We're just sort of waiting and waiting to hear if Lou Lamoriello was going to even announce anything that had been rumored to be locked up. But seeing all the deals flying off the shelves for all these other teams. It's always a funny situation this time of year. We anoint a lot of winners and losers and say, this team got so much better. This team didn't get, got worse. And
right.
When they drop the puck, it usually ends up being pretty different.
100% correct. Hey, I asked for 8 to 10 minutes. You gave me much more. Art Staple, everyone. Follow him on Twitter at Stape Athletic. Again, senior writer for the Islanders, does a fantastic job. Thank you again for carving out some time for me today, and have a great weekend.
No problem, Steven. Thanks a lot.
Big thanks to the listeners. Big thanks to my producer, Brandon Morton. Big thanks to Arthur Staple. Big thanks to you guys, per usual. Make sure to check out all the other shows on TalkNorth.com. You've got Russo. You've got Krasinski. You got Lavelle Neal. Check out the site, TalkNorth.com, at TalkNorthPod on Twitter. Have a great weekend, everyone, and I'll talk to you next Friday here on the Strom Sports Show.